It's a moment of grim transition going on in Japan right now. More than 8,000 people confirmed dead following the disaster 11 days ago. 13,000 or more still missing. In one town alone, officials say 10,000 citizens are still unaccounted for, almost half of the original population. When the tsunami came, the giant harbor gates that should have protected this town of 26,000 people or more didn't shut, and the town was wiped out. Most of the children of Rikuzen Takata were in school at the time. That's what saved them. Many of their parents still missing. We have this report from Damian Grammaticus with our partner, the BBC.
When the sea has taken all you know, how do you comprehend it? Every landmark obliterated. So even finding where his home stood isn't easy for 12-year-old Takuma Wagazugi. This is the first time he's been back, but at house number 3 on his street, there's just a void.
My desk was up there. My bed was over here, and this is where my bookshelf was.
And this is all his sister, 10-year-old Sayaka, found, her school bag. She used it for trips to the beach with her father.
Because we live near the sea, I could play there. I would go with Dad. It was fun. When the tsunami came, it was scary, but I like living by the sea.
Her father is missing. He was a rescue worker directing people to safety while his wife and children fled. 500 bodies have been found here so far, but not his. The high school, their place of refuge, is now full of children who are grieving. And for Takuma and Sayaka, it's become their temporary home.
I wish more people were searching for the missing. I hope we'll find Dad alive and well soon. He's a very important member of my family, and I love him a lot.
In the mud and debris, Sayaka discovered something else. A photo of their father. He was a very good man, her mother says, describing him as the pillar of our family. She went to the morgue today, but still couldn't find his body.
Damian Grammaticus with our partner, the BBC, reporting there from Rikuzen at Takata. About nearly 500,000 Japanese have been displaced by the earthquake and tsunami. And of course, they still have a nuclear crisis perhaps developing in the earthquake zone. Joining us now is Kathy Mueller, communications delegate to Japan for the International Federation of the Red Cross. She's now heading north from Fukushima, Japan, to Mariati. And we're also joined by Dan Sloan, Japan correspondent for Thomson Reuters. Dan, maybe I could start with you. You can kind of give us an update on exactly where the relief efforts stands at this point.
Well, obviously, you mentioned the hundreds of thousands of people that have been displaced that are in temporary housing, still in need of heat, basic, food and water, subsistence level rations, and more or less tonight, it is not a prettier picture than it has been over the previous 11, 12 days. The situation, though, is yesterday about one in five of those that have been replaced are kids, and it is the kind of thing that, this area of Japan is well known for its elderly. They are not particularly mobile, and once they get more or less into the centers themselves, they sit and hope that relief efforts will allow them to return to their homes. The sad truth about what has happened with the destruction is many of those homes they'll never be able to go back to.
Kathy Mueller with the International Federation of the Red Cross. I mean, you arrived in Japan recently, and you're sort of seeing the disaster with fresh eyes. What do you see in terms of how to help the survivors?
I think the assessment that we just heard is pretty accurate. There is some progress being made. We are getting improved access to some of the villages that have been damaged, but you still have more than 300,000 people living in evacuation centers across the northern part of the province. There are some like 2,400 evacuation centers, and as was mentioned, most of the people who are being housed in those centers are the elderly. elderly, and with them, they have special needs, special care, chronic health issues like diabetes and high blood pressure. So that's something that the Red Cross is focusing on, is making sure that that kind of medication is available to help the elderly manage their illnesses.
Well, a particularly vulnerable population there in the Northeast. Kathy Muller, Communication Delegate to Japan for the International Federation of the Red Cross. Daniel Sloan, I just can't get that report from Damon Grammaticus out of my mind. Kids who were safe at school but come home to find one or more of their parents missing. I mean, is that a common story?
Well, you know, it's odd, but often in Japan, the respective school sites are actually evacuation zones because they have big fields and, you know, sometimes tracks that are open, i.e. not vulnerable to things falling on them. You know, it is not to say that the schools themselves were not vulnerable, but arguably compared to the home areas and if they had a place close to the coast, they might have been much safer than where the families themselves were living.
Well, Kathy Muller, that's another complication in terms of helping the population get to safety if you have children who are now without parents.
Definitely, and what we're finding is that a lot of people are now moving in with host families. They live in very close-knit villages, so people who weren't necessarily affected are now accepting a lot of the survivors into their own families. And I'm sure that other relatives will be stepping up to fill the void where parents have been lost.
And Dan Sloan, this is all further complicated by the situation at the Fukushima nuclear power plant, at which there seems to be new difficulties every day.
Unfortunately, today again, there did not seem to be progress, and if anything, temperatures literally were rising, and there was a sense that, again, you know, what is going to happen there? Certainly the anxiety level for Japan and the world rose.
Dan Sloan, Reuters correspondent based in Tokyo, and we also spoke with Kathy Muller, who's the communications delegate to Japan for the International Federation of the Red Cross. Thanks to both of you.
And you can follow the developments at the Fukushima plant or cover the stories of survivors and recovery in Japan by heading to our site, thetakeaway.org. And we're also following the latest on Libya. We want to catch you up to date on the air war in Libya. Here's what we know right now. The U.S. military has confirmed that a U.S. F-15 fighter jet has gone down in Libya. It's not a casualty of the fighting, though. The jet went down because of mechanical failures. The military says one crew member has been safely recovered, and the operation to recover the other is underway. Two members of the crew on that F-15 ejected. General Carter Ham, the commander of coalition operations in Libya, says the Allies are almost done knocking out Gaddafi's air defenses and establishing a no-fly zone throughout the country. We're looking to listeners for your reaction. Should the U.S. be involved in the conflict? One of our listeners posts to our site, everyone is avoiding the 800-pound gorilla in the room. If Libya wasn't an oil-producing nation, we would not be involved. Tell it to the people of Darfur. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.